We're ready to actually moving into an outreach presentation. If anybody has any thoughts on consumer-based outreaches where we could speak together about case management services, I would be open to hearing from others in that regard. And I've been in contact with some of our community partners about that. But if anybody has any thoughts on it, I think we are both open to, you know, showing up in any forum to support clients in that way.
Is it Stephen? Anything for Stephen? Okay, thanks a lot, Stephen. And David, needs assessment, update, COLAs? You take it from here?
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and let Melina lead on the COLA report back, and then I will give you a brief report back on needs assessment.
Thanks, Dave. So I think my first report back is around the COLA targeting folks who are hearing impaired. We haven't had a lot of luck so far in finding providers who are specifically serving this population and having focus groups, etc. And TJ is no longer able to help us out with this one, and I'm thinking unless somebody here has a direct connection to this population, it might be worth discussing picking a new COLA target for this one. And then I have also a brief update around the SIP COLA and just a clarification question. So maybe I'll ask that first, because I think it'll be a little more brief, and then maybe we could talk more about the hearing impaired COLA. So we just wanted to get a little bit of clarification. I think the specific COLA target the group came up with was around people who have specifically accessed SIP or shelter in place housing since the pandemic. And in talking to some providers, it sounds like some providers might have clients who specifically access this service, and other providers have maybe, it sounds like, kind of broader access to clients who went from being unhoused to housed during the pandemic. And I think since the clientele of both of these populations is very similar, that we might get better data and results if we're able to expand the COLA target to include, I think, anyone who was unhoused and then housed during the pandemic, including people who accessed the SIP program. But I wanted to hear if that sounds okay to you all, and if you have any thoughts, and if Dave or Valerie, if you have anything you want to add to that.
I don't have a problem with it. I think it's a good idea if you think it'll expand the number of participants. Does anybody else see a problem with adding more people like that?
I would say that it's always my inclination to be more inclusive in these things, as long as it doesn't affect our data in how we're able to sort of parse what this looks like demographically, and is there a distinct difference between those two groups? What I might suggest is that it might be that we're doing those, if in fact we end up doing it as a focus group, which has been the traditional sort of mode that we apply to this, then we do them as separate focus groups. And if we do them, if it is just a survey like we did last year, emailed survey, get them back, so forth, Then maybe we add in the survey and the question around housing, specifically whether it was shelter in place, like city funded housing, or something other than that, so that we can at least differentiate between the two. But beyond that, I think I'd recommend we go for more inclusion.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I say let's do it.
Awesome. And then I think there's also a chance that if we do end up doing a focus group, we might not be able to find enough clients to do like just a SIP focus group. So in that case, if we can't do two separate focus groups, maybe we'll combine them for the focus group too. Okay, cool. Thanks, everyone. So do folks have ideas or thoughts around shifting the second COLA from looking at hearing impaired folks to, I think, Dave, you had an idea around that.
Well, I was just going to suggest before we get started on that conversation, we're a little short on actual committee members today. Mm-hmm. So maybe this is the beginning of this conversation. We do have time. We're still early in the year. We already have one COLA moving forward. We've already started sort of the outreach on that. So it's not super time sensitive at the moment, but I think it's worth just sort of laying it out there. Like we should be thinking about it. And that said, I partially due to some of the presentations we've seen recently, specifically the one we saw at Full Council, and I was talking to Mark about this earlier today, and it does sort of feel like, you know, that number, the stark sort of how many more overdose deaths we saw last year relative to COVID deaths seems to indicate, and maybe somebody has this answer, I don't know how many more overdose deaths, if there were more than an average year. My sense is there were more, but how many more? And those suggest two different things to me. One is we have an ongoing public health issue that we haven't mobilized around, and there hasn't been a public will to address like we did with COVID, and what does that mean for us? And, or how many more there were last year, and what does that look like? So it seems like, and we've done specific sort of substance use outreach things in the past. Specifically, my first year doing the needs assessment, we did a crystal meth users needs assessment where it was just that. Do we want to think about maybe putting something together around opiate use, or having experienced an overdose, or having a partner or something, or having sort of been in proximity to an overdose? I know there's a lot of people who for whom that's been a very big reality in their lives and continues to be. That would be my suggestion, is fleshing that out in some way. I'm not exactly sure what it looks like or where we draw the parameters, but that would be my suggestion.
I love the idea, and I think you're right. This would be a great beginning discussion. It'd be great to have more council members or committee members present to kind of add their voices to this. And it'd be great if maybe like Beth or someone else could provide some context around you know, the data that they have around this situation.
I don't have the very best data, but having seen that report and a few other reports recently, the trend has been hugely up, as Dave is highlighting, though also it was going up because of fentanyl as well as because of COVID. I think the two kind of converged in a way that I don't think we could disentangle, because it happened everywhere. Maybe the fentanyl supply was different in other places, so maybe someday it'll be disentangled. So in general, it is just a huge number of people, 600 plus people, and it has very similar disparities as some of the things we see in HIV. And also, I mean, persons who inject drugs, that's still an HIV risk factor. That's fairly significant. So there are other ways it connects in the prevention side as well. I don't know how that would work for the COLA, but just that's what I was thinking about when you guys were introducing the idea.
I don't know if everyone saw Ben's comment in the chat. I think that more and more we're trying to keep sort of a language capacity as forefront in our minds when starting these kind of things. So it would make sense that we would try and do something Spanish language specific, especially given that that observation around Latinx. So I don't know that we necessarily, I mean, we could do Latinx needle users, but that feels a little bit narrow. But I think that we would endeavor to include them. So any other thoughts about how we draw the boundaries around this specific COLA? Richard?
Yeah, I don't know how this, like, at the full council meeting, the statistics that we heard from Katie Burke and them are, it's not just opiates. In fact, that's like third on the list. It's been, and I work at needle exchanges. People are doing a lot of reversals. We're giving out Narcan by the barrel full. But they're coming in and they're talking about people smoking crack, and the smokables are putting people out on fentanyl. There's a lot going on with fentanyl that just isn't needle. I don't know how to frame that either, but there's a lot of people coming in. There's the overdoses are occurring in much more than just needle heroin use now. In fact, that's like third on the list. And there are a lot of reversals going on in conjunction with the huge numbers. So I don't know where that all fits, but there's a lot of talk at the needle exchange about people smoking crack, overdosing, people smoking speed, overdosing. So I don't know. And it's all populations. Everyone's asking for Narcan.
Yeah. And I just noted Ben's comment. My sense is a lot of times that's unknowing fentanyl use. Fentanyl is being used to cut a lot of different drugs as sort of a enhancer or a booster. Though I do know that people intentionally use it because they think they can sort of, they're the ones that can balance the high without getting, yeah. So I'm not exactly sure.
I was surprised at the number of people that specify that that's their trip. They do straight fentanyl. That's what they seek. And in fact, when there's overdoses, they seek out the connections that dealt that out.
That is such an old, that is like, the most frustrating story that I've been hearing, you know, I think we've all been hearing for years. I mean, that substance users are looking for the dealers that are accidentally ODing people. I mean, since forever. I agree about Paul, and I think that Paul and Laura are the people, the place we probably go to for outreach and start that conversation as far as like, when we decide. And as I said before, we don't have to come up with the answers today. We just wanted to sort of start the conversation here. We can wait till next week when Laura's around. I think that she would be really helpful in informing how we shape this. So it's up to you guys. We can table it until, I said next week, I meant next month. Is that cool?
Yeah, especially since you said we got time. So there's no harm in kind of adding more voices.
Valerie, Melina, how do you feel about pushing this whole thing back a month, at least a month?
I feel good about it.
Same.
Okay. There we go then. I think that we have our answer. So let's be thinking about it in the intervening weeks, and we'll get back at it then. Okay. Well, thanks, Ben. Yeah, if we have hard numbers,
I'll find it. That's, like, okay,
I appreciate you doing the diligence to look it up. And if we do have additional hard numbers coming in the next month, maybe that would be helpful if people happen to, if something catches your eye, we want to bring those. We can also review the presentation from full council. But in the meantime, we'll just keep it in the back of our heads. So I'm going to move on to needs assessment. It's going to be real short because there's not a whole lot to report. I've started the sort of most nascent version of my outreach around that, mostly because I still have some administrative stuff I need to sort out before I get going, specifically the getting my finance people to approve my check request for gift cards. I don't want to get the ball rolling with service providers, get them recruiting people until I have gift cards in place. And I don't want to sort of, what I found is if I sort of start the outreach and then have a stall on my end for some reason, it has a detrimental effect to the outcome. So I want to make sure all my ducks are in a row before I get the whole thing up and running. I did take the committee's feedback from last month's meeting where I was absent or was unavailable. I was in Hawaii. So that was great. There were a couple things. I combined a couple of the questions that were added in because my concern was that I felt like we might be overloading participants with too many questions. And I've observed that that can really have a detrimental effect to the people's finishing and or responding honestly or even taking part at all. We're good to go basically as soon as I get all my sort of administrative aspects squared away. So that's kind of where we're at. Nothing else to report with a needs assessment unless you guys have any questions. Thank you, Ben.
So that's it, David?
That's it. Let's move on to the next agenda item.
Yeah, that's going to be the HIV Community Planning Council virtual blended versus in-person meetings. And so this committee today will discuss our preferences and thoughts on returning to in-person meetings. So what would I do just here? Just open it up to anyone that had discussion? Yeah.
If you would like, I can sort of frame that conversation a little bit for you.
Please do.
I don't know. None of you were at steering last month, I presume. Richard, I don't know if you were there.
Yes.
But essentially I saw your hand, Lee. I'm just going to finish my framing and then I will throw it to you. Clearly we're planning on when is the most opportune time to start meeting in person again. And what does that look like strategically? What are people's comfort level with having those in-person meetings? And how do we feel about a sort of blended telecommuting and in-person meeting? I will tell you that there has been fairly significant pushback against the idea of having blended meetings. People felt like it was ineffective, especially for those who were telecommuting while everyone else was in person. But it's really essentially what we're doing here is in the same way that we process sort of motions that move through all committees and then are voted upon or discussed at full council. We're starting that conversation here. It'll move through all committees and some decision making will happen at steering at the end of the month. So that's essentially what we're looking at. Lee?
It'd be interesting to know what the objections are around blended meetings. I'm all for going back. And it'd be interesting to know, maybe we could poll council members and figure out where people are at with this.
I mean, I think that that's sort of what we're doing in essence by having these conversations in committee is just having people state a preference and then at steering where co-chairs and staff who have observed all these meetings can sort of share that information in the conversation. But I suppose we could also, I mean, that can just be part of the suggestion is we just poll. As far as the pushback around blended meetings, for people who are already having blended meetings, they felt like it was not effective for the people who were being there in sort of telepresence. And they were having trouble hearing all the details, and they were having trouble being heard. And it just felt chaotic, I think was the description. I'm not sure who this person is who's entering the meeting. Maybe a member of the public?
Recording in progress.
I can comment on blended meetings, just having experienced some earlier in the pandemic.
Please.
I think there's technical challenges that should be considered in that, I mean, some of the things we ran into is the people on the phone could very rarely hear. One aspect is that it's not the same as your old meetings you came from. At least at that time, there was social distancing. Everybody had to be at least 6 feet apart. So the rooms were even bigger than before. And nobody was especially close to the phone, kind of like our experiences with the state. So what would happen is if somebody had something important that everybody on the telephone needed to hear, they would need to walk over to the phone far, far away. So there was just a lot of very long pauses in the meeting between whoever was speaking. There'd be one or two of those phone triangle things. I forget what those are called. But so just the working out the audio quality in both directions, the people in the room speaking to the people on the phone and loud enough speakers of the people on the phone to the room and taking more time. But I mean, everybody got to experience everything. So I think the benefits are quite resounding.
Are we getting instruction from the health department on when we can do this?
As far as I know, they have not. I mean, based on what I heard from Thomas and Dean, it seemed like they were expecting us to, or you to have sort of your own preferences and leaving it up to your comfort level. Before any sort of decision making took place. That said, I think that eventually Brown is going to kick back in, and telepresence for these kind of meetings is no longer going to be legal at some point. So at minimum, that's our hard deadline for when we have to go back to in-person meetings. My sense is, based on what I've observed in other public meeting forums and what I'm hearing from DPH staff, is that that might be a little while before that actually happens. Nobody's rushing into that. So
I can share the DPS. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead, Richard.
No. So if we have some time, it's the 1st of June. It's the beginning of June. So like if all committees do what we're doing in this committee now, just small groups of people making some choices, could we do that for the month of June and each of the separate committees, like we're doing today, have a talk and set something up for July, the offer of each separate committee meeting in person in July. We start to get our feet wet, and maybe this month and July, you could also, the Shanti staff could put to the whole committee their idea of, we're setting out a poll with the idea of these meetings happening in July piecemeal, with the full council meeting at the end of August. So try to get people's pulse now early with a poll, continue that, maybe even on the agenda in the full council meeting in July, where that poll stands for a full council meeting in August, with us as small committees meeting in July, maybe at 25 Van Ness.
So, I mean, I would say that, like, so it sounds like both you and Lee are largely in favor of going back to in-person meetings sooner rather than later. Am I misjudging that?
No, I'd like going back to in-person meetings, but people are going to be, they want to see which way the wind's blowing in the country. I understand that. It's the summer, the end of a long COVID winter. So we break them in easy with a target date maybe of the end of August, after they see some smaller committees meeting in person in the interim.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's you might be putting the cart before the horse and sort of suggesting that strategy here. I think that steering is maybe the more appropriate place to sort of be laying out actual sort of functions of how we get there. I think that what we want to hear is, do you want to go back to seeing each other in person, or do you still have trepidation about what that looks like as individuals?
And
I think that, I think we're also interested in hearing, you know, I mean, what Stephen has to say, I mean, and us on staff, we also are going to be in some ways bound by what Shanti as an organization decides its sort of safety parameters are. That will likely be have to factor in what council does, but they have their own requirements. So, Stephen?
I'm happy to weigh in. I just didn't know whether public comment was appropriate or not in this regard. You know, I qualified as a community health member, or, you know, as a community health worker at the very beginning of this as a result of the work that we were doing with clients. I think that that comes, you know, with it, like I felt like that was a privilege in a lot of ways. And I feel like there was a lot of, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with that. I want everyone to feel safe. That's what my goal is. I don't know what that looks like for everyone. For me, I'm strongly in favor of in-person meetings, just as someone who like manages like, you know, my own brain. I feel more in tune when I'm in front of people, and that's where I feel, you know, like I'm most effective. That being said, like, you know, we work with some very vulnerable clients and they're the population that we're serving, and I want them to feel comfortable as well. And I want them to feel like they can join the council if they want to, you know? So I think it's ultimately a decision for the council, and I'm happy to support that in whatever it looks like.
Okay. I also wanted to note for the record that we have another attendee here. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Sorry, took me a minute. I'm Sue. I'm assuming you're talking about me.
Yes.
Right. Okay. I'm Sue Wahlberg-Smith, and I apologize for being late. I had another meeting, but I am the, I work for Merck, and I'm the new community liaison for Northern California. So I just want to say thank you for letting me join your meetings, and I'm all for in-person meetings. I joined late, so I'm not, you know, I just am jumping on here, but I am, as long as I agree with, is it Stefan or Stephen?
Both.
I agree with you. I mean, as long as people feel safe, I'm all about making the majority comfortable. So that's my way in, but that's who I am. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Well, I mean, I don't know if anyone else has any, like, sounds like we've got a fairly strong consensus for in-person meetings coming out of this committee. So I think that, Stephen, when you attend steering, you can share that with the steering committee that you, I don't think there was anyone here saying they absolutely feel unsafe in coming back to meetings. So,
I don't, just for the record, I don't typically attend the steering meetings.
Sure.
But yeah.
The other thing I'd recommend is following up to make sure that anybody that's not making a meeting while you're doing this inquiry has an opportunity to voice their concern.
Oh, absolutely. I think that my guess is that we are going to there's nobody feels especially rushed on this. My guess is that we're going to have this conversation through all committees, have it at steering, and then following that, maybe a poll goes out. Maybe it is a sort of larger conversation that happens at full council. And then maybe some sort of decision takes place post all of that. So I'd be surprised if there was any sort of snap judgment on this case within the next month or so. But I also wouldn't be surprised if we ended up going back to in-persons in August, maybe. But that's just a guess based on what I'm hearing.
I mean, there's really good food.
Sometimes there's really good food. Oh, Valerie doesn't even know about this. She's never even been to an in-person meeting. Yeah, there's a whole, we have a whole food budget, and there's Brazilian food and Southern food, and Ali put together this whole list of caterers that we use. That's, some of them are very good.
I want the Ashanti staff to know that I used the DoorDash card well in between Bassa Seafood for the combination and oyster and chips, and I think committee when I'm doing it.
I would love to hear that. Well, Richard, it seems like maybe, oh yeah, chubby noodle. It seems like maybe we're wrapping up here. Is there anything else we need to cover before? I guess we need the next meeting and all the last bit of the agenda here.
Anything else? Anyone want to chime in? Anything? So with that, thanks everyone, staff, Shanti staff, and everyone attending. Looks like our next meeting is scheduled for Zoom Wednesday, July 7th. Until then, everyone be safe. Have a great summer.
Happy Pride.
Yeah, happy Pride.
Thank you, Lee. Bye, everyone.
All right. Melina and Valerie, do you want to hang back for just a second? And we will...
Welcome, Sue. Thank you for coming.
Wait, Dave, can I just ask one question? Did you want... were you saying that I should go to the steering committee?
Sorry, did I say your name instead of Richard? I thought I said when Richard co-chair goes to steering. I think somebody else had said your name just before I spoke.
Have dismissed it. It could have been the internet too. So anyway, thank you all. Sorry about that.
Take it easy, Stephen.
See you.